Again, this is the newbie. This is the reason why you need a home-based firewall. If you're looking for the IDS talk, that's a couple doors down on the left. Thomas, your speaker.
I guess while we're waiting, I'll just do a brief who I am and what I do. I've been in security for about 3 years now, since 1997. I started working out at Kellogg Corporation as a system administrator slash web person slash firewall person, and loved it so much I stayed in it. And then I moved. I now live in Chicago, and I worked at the Chicago Board of Trade Clearing Corporation for a year and a half, doing the internet security for them. We were a securities organization. We did about $2 billion a day and did a lot of analysis, a lot of looking at systems, a lot of just pretty much everything, you know, everything from secure ID to stuff. I currently work at a financial institution, which shall remain nameless, much smaller trading firm, options exchange, and do security there. We're primarily a much smaller shop. We're about probably 75 employees. We use Linux. We unfortunately use NT in a few places. And I basically am responsible for the security there, everything from monitoring intrusions to recovering from, you know, if anyone manages to root a box, which since I've been there, they haven't, but, you know, that may happen. You never know. Anyways, so this talk is really basic. It is aimed at those of you with DSL and cable modems. Basically, I can't tell you how many people I hear who basically say, oh, I don't need a modem. I don't have anything important on my computer. And my basic reason, motivation for this talk was to prove that even if you don't think you have anything valuable on your computer, you probably do. In my mind, before I begin, I'll begin in a second, the kinds of information that people don't think of as valuable are financial information. I run Quicken. I have all of my bank accounts on Quicken. Well, if I have a Windows 98 machine that is connected by default, and I'm unfortunately silly enough to share my C drive, people can download my Quicken, and there's Quicken crack programs, and they can get my password, and they can pay my bills for me, or their own. That's one example. Another example is simply just games. I mean, you've been playing Quake 3 or whatever the new thing is for you know, 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 hours, and someone says, ha, 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 I'll delete your Quake file. I mean, there's... Thank you for the interruption. Anyways... But there are actually valuable pieces of information that you wouldn't think of as valuable. How would you like to have to reformat your pretty new HP? Do you know how long it takes to install Windows 98 if you've never done it before, and even if you know how? Anyways, I'm going to begin now because it looks like we're kind of settling down. So the title of this talk is Home-Based Firewalls and Why You Need Them. Newbie track. There we go. Okay, this is a threat matrix. I'm going to explain it to you. Along the top axis are threat OS, the type of technology, cable, DSL, or modem. And then I'll just go down really briefly and explain this. Basically, the first threat is the network neighborhood, Microsoft's infinite let's share our network with the world. Basically, Windows, technically Linux can be also classified in here. If you're using something called Samba, Linux can export file systems just like Windows can. And the Samba, unfortunately, on Linux suffers from all of the same security problems in some respects that the Windows one does, unless you set it upright, and it's kind of hard to set upright. Basically, network neighborhood exists as a threat on both cable, DSL, and modem. Now, the main differences between cable, DSL, and modem is generally intermittent unless you've got a leased line or, you know, some people have ISDN. Poor people. Anyways, they have ISDN, and it's basically up and down. Cable and DSL are what we call 24/7 connections. They're usually always on, and usually your computer's always connected. So the threat risk is much higher for cable and DSL modems and DSL as opposed to modem. DOS's denial of service, everything from the ICMP fragmenting tax that people put out to, you know, the ones that took down Yahoo and simple things like doing WinNuke. You know, if you don't like someone IRC and you WinNuke them, that's a denial of service attack. There's a whole wide class of these, you know, and depending on the OS. All three are vulnerable. All three platforms: modem, cable, and DSL. IRC chat attacks. These are probably what I would consider to be, for a home user who is young, I was saying probably in the 14 to 21 range, when IRC is still a cool thing. Basically, that's your greatest threat, because you have a lot of very young, very immature people using these things, and they tend to be very reactive, and they'll shoot an attack at you, whether it's, in my day, back in 1992, with tsunami, you know, everyone, boom, it would just send you a bunch of DCC send requests, to now, it's more sophisticated with DCC send, DCC chat, and lovely ActiveX, and ICQ, and all the instant messaging things I'm kind of classing together. Those are probably, in my mind, the single largest vulnerability to a home user. Because you've got an unknown class of people that are there. I mean, you don't know. You've got 17 million users. Out of that, probably at least 10 are sociopaths. So, I mean, you just got the sheer numbers of people there. And that's everything from AOL Instant Messenger to whatever. But I class them as IRC because they're kind of, in my mind, they're all the same thing. And, again, all three are vulnerables. You're an attack relay. The reason why I underscored Linux, most people will say, oh, but isn't Linux more secure than Windows? And my answer to you is probably out of the box, in my mind, and I'm probably going to make people mad, I think Linux is less secure out of the box than Windows is, because Linux has more services. Linux is a full operating system. It's got SendMail. It's got Telnet. It's got, I mean, if you ship, like, I think the last time I counted, there's like 14 services that ship by default with Red Hat. And that number may be wrong. But, I mean, there's just huge numbers of services that are insecure by default with Linux. And also, a lot of attacks are targeted towards Linux, especially Red Hat, because it is such a popular operating system. Windows, I mean, basically the worst thing you can do with Windows, at least in my mind, unless you're doing some weird stuff, is someone can share your hard drives, and they can whack information, and they can get information. They maybe can take down your box. But the chances of using you for denial of service, like, unless you're silly enough to be running personal web server, and then, well, that's different. But I'm just saying out-of-the-box personal web server isn't running. It's not NT. I'm just saying Windows 98. So, anyways, basically, you an attack relay means someone comes into your machine, they root it, and they put something like that they call the zombies. There's a straddle lock, and there's a whole bunch of other utilities that use you to attack somebody else. I think, especially with the Linux system, this is, and it is possible with Windows. There are the Windows clients and the Windows stuff, but I think that the greatest prevalence that I have seen have been the Linux systems, especially in universities, used as attack relays. Well, you're on 24/7. Your box is there, so it means people have a lot of time to crack your box, whether it's Windows or Linux. Again, I just wanted to explain what the underline in Linux means. It basically means that I think Linux is a higher risk operating system simply because of the defaults out of the box allow it to be used for more network connectivity. Backdoors, basically they're just, you know, if you're familiar with the legend of the burning of sacking of Troy, was basically the Trojans, the Greeks basically made this big wooden horse, and everyone, I'm sure most of you probably heard this, all the soldiers got inside of it and they made it look like a gift, and the Trojans opened up their walls and took the Trojan horse in, and then all the guards came out and killed everybody. Well, that's kind of where the idea of Trojan horse comes from. And what that means is basically people will make a program that looks like it gives you, say, you know, maybe it's a Quake server, but it also has additional functionality that you don't know about that somebody else can use to control your machine, like last year's at Cult of the Dead Cow. CDC, there's like a, you could have a Cult of the Dead Cow wrapper, like say you make your pretty new, I don't know, Fluffy Slayer or something, you know, one of those games that everyone likes, and it also installs the other thing so they can remotely control your PC. That's another kind. And they exist for both Windows and Linux. But because of the fact that Linux has the concept of user privilege, now mind you, I'm not including NT in this. I mean, technically, NT kind of has user privilege, but not really, I mean, in my mind, because it's just not really well done. Anyways, the Linux has the concept of root, which basically allows you to If you're installing new stuff, you're not doing it as a privileged user. So all it can do is maybe delete all the files in your directory, and it's not going to be able to bind to ports it's not supposed to and stuff like that. Again, the reason why modems are less, it's harder with backdoors and modems and a lot of the others, because modems are up and down. Their IP addresses change all the time. It's hard to predict when a user is going to use the modem. You know, it's like Billy decides to go play Quake at 3 in the morning. You can't predict that. But with a cable and DSL, they're on all the time. So again, if someone knows or has a utility that, say, it transmits your IP address at the moment you're out, because a lot of the Trojans will do that, they'll very kindly send out email to the attacker saying, oh, this is the IP address of this person who was kind enough to download your software, and here's their IP address so you can control their machine. So basically, that's, again, just the different attack matrices. Personal information /HDWipe, I just list that as an option, because if you do the right things with Windows, it's very easy for people to do that, especially with cable modems. It's like cable modems are, I kind of liken them to party lines. If any of you were over the age of, I think, 25. When we were kids, basically all the phones would ring and you could listen to your neighbor's conversations. Well, cable modems are exactly the same way. You can go look at Aunt Mabel's hard drive if she just leaves it by default, because, you know, it's just the way they ship by default. And sometimes people say, oh, I want file and printer sharing, and they just turn it on, and of course it's bound to, in Windows, the TCP/IP adapter, which very kindly shares it with the internet, and most people don't realize that. That basically their neighborhood is, you know, for the world. But even then, on the local network with a cable, you and everybody else in your neighborhood can see all traffic. So if you have a cable modem, assume that anything that you're typing in or saying, unless it's across an SSL channel, can be and will be snooped. So if you're looking at your Dow Jones Industrial Average stuff and you're not using SSL, they will find your password with a packet sniffer, period. So that's kind of the difference with the cable modem. No, it's not on the slide. Crappy security. Both Windows and Linux, I don't cover FreeBSD because I don't have any experience with it. I hear the default security with FreeBSD is much better by default. Again, but it's not a mainstream operating system, and frankly, I don't think your average home user is going to be able to install it. Linux, on the other hand, with a lot of the GUI and new utilities they have, it's getting better for a home user to install Linux, and you see a lot of home users with it. Basically, both Windows and Linux just ship with horrible defaults. In the case of Windows, you have to do 7 levels of, I mean, I think, what are they, Surface Pack 6A now on NT. It's like, I mean, and then there, I think Windows 95, they have like, you know, it's update of the month. At Windows 95, I think there's like 30 patches I had to apply to make it secure. And 98's a little better. I think it's only 15. 2000, well, we don't know yet. It's too new. They already have, I think, 5 or 6 already or more. I don't really keep track of the Microsoft world too much. And basically, and Linux is the same thing. I mean, even with the 2.2 kernel, I have seen, like, kernel 2.3 had a problem where people could crash your IP stack. 2.2.15 had problems with something called masquerading, which I'll explain later, where basically if someone was smart enough, they could get into your computer through the kernel. And so they updated that to 2.2.16. So there are numbers of updates, and for the packages, like the send mail, like the packages in Linux specifically that are crappy, just, and it doesn't matter what they are. Send mail, the POP3 daemons, the remote procedure calls, they're all Unix things that most people don't need. Send mail you could, but there's better things than send mail that you can install. Anyways, and yes, there are all three. So just basically this point is to make sure, do not assume that your OS is secure out of the box, because it is not. It is massively insecure. Basically, unwanted content. I kind of put this in because it's just like those annoying banner ads or those stupid, if you ever have the misfortune of going to a porn site and you have JavaScript turn on, you get 17 windows that pop up. That's the kind of thing I mean that are unwanted content or, you know, ads and banners and all those other annoyances that have come to be part of the web, especially if you use Juno. basically, and finally, viruses. Viruses are kind of strange on Linux, though, because a virus, in order to do a lot of damage, requires a privilege level. And so if you install a virus as a user, it's only going to probably hurt your files. On the other hand, if you run it as root, which is God in the Linux world, you're probably in a good deal more trouble. And there is a possibility for Unix viruses. I think with Unix, you see more hidden, unintended features. Like it'll listen, like you download the newest version of, say, some hacked version of POP3, and it also listens on port 110 for SSH, so someone could come in and root your machine without you knowing it. So viruses are just a little different on Linux. And frankly, Microsoft is the single biggest target because everyone hates them. I know that sounds weird, but it's true, because everyone hates Microsoft. A lot of people like Linux, and as such, don't devote as much time to doing horrible and nasty things to Linux users. Now, there are people who do, but the anti-Microsoft contingent is quite large. So you're a very large threat model. Your threat model just is infinite with Microsoft Windows. Someone sees you running Microsoft Windows, and then they're 14 years old, and they're mad because their friend who's 18 says Microsoft sucks, and lo and behold, you're a target. So it's kind of an irrationality against Microsoft. I personally don't like them a lot, but anyways, so your viruses, and also viruses, just like in nature, have target ecosystems. If you have a large number of organisms with the same genotype and with the same kind of classes of information, viruses target them wonderfully because it's the same thing. All they have to do is find one level of, everybody knows that autoexec bat is in /. Well, if you want to write a virus in Visual Basic, well, guess what? Every version of Windows, of which I think there's 90 million now or something like that, has Visual Basic scripting installed by default, and most people don't turn it off. So, well, let's just use a Visual Basic scripting engine and write ourselves a Outlook virus. That's, the love bug and all those other things, Anyways, but these are just the threat models. Basically, here is how a firewall will address these various threats. Network neighborhood. You can't. If you have your firewall set up properly, no one except the people that you want will be able to browse your network neighborhood. I personally think don't allow anyone from the outside to do it, but if you want Aunt Mabel to see your children, fine. I don't recommend it, though. Denial of service. Firewalls can stop a lot of things like the ping of death, which in Windows, they sometimes fix it and they sometimes don't. I'm not going to get into that. I'll get into that later. It'll block it. It just says, if someone pings your firewall, it's not there. There's no response. You just drop the packet. Someone tries to trace route to you. Those are the two basic ways. Even Nmap, if you have someone who's fairly inexperienced, I'm being nice, actually stupid, using Nmap for the first time, and they basically don't know what they're doing, well, Nmap will not detect a host. And they'll say, use the minus SP option, don't ping. But that'll stop probably 50% of your script kiddies because they'll be using Nmap front end and they won't know how to do it. Or they're using it from command line and so they can't ping it, so Nmap can't find it. So they just move on to another host that they can ping. So, and again, it's reducing your, it's kind of like stealth. It's like the stealth bomber. You reduce your radar signature. You want to make it possible so if someone pings or looks at your address, they can't tell it's up. So that they use the trace route, they use ping, and a lot of the denial of service use a class of packets. There's more than three kinds. The three major kinds are ICMP, which is diagnostic, is he up, is he down. There's UDP, which is basically, it's just a fast way of sending things. It doesn't matter what order your packets get there or how they get there. And then there's TCP, which is what most things use, which basically is reliable and it ensures that everybody gets what they're supposed to, and it's called reliable transport mechanisms. And those are the three kinds, pretty much, that you guys, as home users, are going to be concerned with. But the denial of service is mostly ICMP packets, and if you block those, you can stop a whole range of the denial of service attacks against your system that'll come from IRC, that'll come from ICQ. IRC chat attacks, same thing pretty much. If you have a rule that says, if anyone tries to initiate a connection with my firewall that is not something that I sent out, go to hell. What that basically means is no one can initiate a connection. Say they've got a server set up. Even if you downloaded it and you set up this server and you're running the ICQ web server where they can root your machine. Well, they can't initiate a connection to your machine because you have your firewall set up not to do that. So basically, even if you get compromised, you're still protected to some degree. Not completely protected. The firewall does not solve every problem. There's lots of other problems. But it protects you from a wide range of common attacks. You're an attack relay. Basically, if you protect a lot of these systems which ship with crappy defaults with a hardened host, you're going to be, it's kind of the same thing as getting rid of the windows on your house and replacing them with steel. It's harder to break in. Someone can if they have a blowtorch, but they need a blowtorch. And that's basically that. The idea is to protect vulnerable hosts behind a hardened host. It's the idea of a castle mentality, that you put walls around your house. I don't know if it's perfect, but right now I think it's the major thing that it's really the only thing we have as a start. Hopefully there'll be something better in the future, but anyways. Again, this is another threat, personal information, hard disk wipe. They can basically control the inflow and outflow of data. You can prevent any unknown ports from connecting to the outside world. So if you have no reason to be doing NetBIOS shares across the world, you can tell your firewall, deny them from the inside out. So people can't just send stuff from your machine out. It even allows you to basically restrict. You can even restrict it with your children. I mean, if you have kids and stuff and you don't want them to go into certain sites, you can actually have the firewall deny certain web locations. We'll get into more a little bit later. Unwanted content. This is more not a firewall, but there's two kinds of firewalls. One of them is called the packet filter, and another is called the proxy. And don't worry about what they are. Just know that the proxy kind can basically look at content as it goes out. And you can actually say, I don't want to allow any connections to or from ads.doubleclick.net. And that way, there goes 90% of the ads that you have. And if you want a slow connection, or even if you want a fast connection, it just gets rid of unwanted content. And there's things like Junk Buster and other things like that that block the content. Spam. Basically, a firewall, you can actually use, it's not technically a firewall, but you can have something like Procmail, which is a Unix thing, which goes out and filters your mail before you get it. And if it, say, has anything like sex or money or fast or cash or you know, make, you know, women or, you know, hot chicks, it will throw it to the trash before you even see it. So it can technically do spam filtering, which I find is very nice. I don't actually do it, but at some point when I feel like it, I'll sit down and make filters. Viruses, again, firewalls can basically inspect email for, you know, a lot of the words ones. Again, this is more talking Linux firewalls, mind you. That basically, it's kind of, honestly, for a newbie, I don't think it's something you want to try right off. But just to let you know that it's possible, they can actually look at the content of the message, and if it has, like, Visual Basic in it or anything else, it just scrubs it out. You get the message, and lo and behold, there's no more Visual Basic in it. And it can actually, if you get one of the Unix-based firewall things, it can scan your email before you get it for viruses. I don't know how paranoid you people are, but if you're a small home business, that's a nice feature, and it's free. Types of home firewalls. There's the appliance version, which I'm a real big fan of if you do not like dealing with computers. Basically, you plug them in, you configure them with a web-based interface, and you're done. They take about 10 minutes to set up. Linux firewalls, they're very flexible, but I'll be honest with you, they do take some time to set up. I think if you're completely new to Linux, you're looking at probably about 30 to 40 hours of time to get a Linux firewall working. If you've never done it before and you don't know how to compile a kernel and you don't know how to do other things. For those of you that have time, I recommend it. It's you learn a lot, and they're real good. Windows-based firewalls, there's things like Black Ice Defender, and I don't know, there's a whole variety of them. I don't like them simply because I don't like bad things to get to my host to begin with. With a new computer costing $300 or these appliances costing $400, my information is valuable enough to have a host in front of my host that is hardened and I know is safe. I don't care what you do to Windows, it is never going to be completely secure, ever. That's my opinion. People can feel free to argue with me. Just a second. I'm going to go through the rest, and then how am I doing on time? Okay, just checking. We're getting through, and then I'll take questions after. Appliance vendors, SonicWall. This one I have the only one that I have experience with. It's what we use at work. They are actually pretty good. Their firmware can be a little buggy, though. I think for an average home user, it'll work fine. I will be honest, though, that they're real sensitive to power fluctuations, and you probably should get a filtered line power line supply to make them work, because I saw some really weird things with them. But they're not bad. Once you get them set up, they take about 30 minutes. You plug it in, you turn it on, you get your web browser, you go to the interface on it. Basically, what you do is you plug in your internet connection, you plug in your home network, and the nice thing about the Sonic Walls is they have a built-in hub, so you don't need to buy a hub. It's everything's in one unit. So you plug your computers into what they call the LAN interface, and your other thing into the WAN interface, and then you turn it on, and then you point your browser to the IP address. You just follow the directions, and then you configure it. You know, it asks you what's your IP address. Are you using DHCP? Are you using PPP? OE, which is something different, and then you just go through all of it and hit OK, and you're done. Once you turn it on, they work. I mean, I've had one up now for 50 days and haven't rebooted it, and it works great. It's very good at resisting outside attacks. I've done Nmap on it. I've done Nessus. I've done Saint. It completely denies any inbound connections, which is great. It stops almost every class of attack that's inbound. You know, pings of death. People can't ping you. They can't trace route you. Phoenix, they look neat. They're kind of expensive. I mean, $895 for a home user I think is a bit much. It's just a lot of money. They're kind of neat because they've got this cool glowing thing on the top, but other than that, I don't know if they're worth $800. WatchGuard, I haven't used it. They were the cheapest. I very strongly recommend that you get these on a loan basis and you try it for a little bit and see if you like it, because these things are real new and they may or may not work as advertised. And not only that, but I recommend that you have someone, if you have a friend who basically knows what they're doing, have them probe it from the outside just to see what it looks like. You know, see if their default firewall rule set has 17,000 ports open. I mean, because a lot of them ship. Some of them that I haven't tested may ship with stupid defaults, which is very frequent. Linux-based solutions, T-Rex Firewall is one. You can actually buy a CD with it, and it installs on top of stock Linux. It looks neat. I haven't actually used it, but it's kind of cool because it's only $50, and it's kind of a neat option. Here's some others. Some Windows-based host, once again. You know, everything from Black Ice Defender to, I don't know, there's all kinds of them. I don't like them. I don't recommend them. You can get them if you don't want to buy a firewall. They're better than nothing. I mean, that's my basic thing, is they're better than nothing. These are just some, now I'm going to kind of start going into some random things. Some online, if you are wanting to do Linux and really don't want to learn IP chains, you can go to that URL. And, oh, by the way, you don't have to worry about taking these URLs down, because all of this presentation is on my website and can be downloaded. I'll just tell you, the URL is www.geocities.com/TMUNN. And if that doesn't work, same thing, /SYMGRIPH, SYMGRYPH. And so you can, all these links. Sure. www.geocities.com/T=MU=NNC. And there's the two top links. There's this presentation and my IP chains presentation are available for download. This is a PDF file, so you'll need Acrobat to view it. /S=S=S, Y=M=Mary, G=Goat, R=Ray, Y=Peter, H. There's no, yeah. I don't know, because GeoCities has just been migrating me from Yahoo, absorbed them, and so it's kind of confusing. But basically, there's several. The one that I want to mention here is Coyote Linux. It's really cool. You have to have a Linux system to install it, unless you want to pay $30 and then you can do it from a Windows system. It is a single floppy disk-based firewall. You take your old 386 with two NICs, and they have to be supported. If they're not supported, don't bother. Then you turn it on and it works. I mean, it's kind of, it's like, if it's like an old Pentium lying around or something, or even an old 386 or 486 lying around, and you want an easier way to do this and you don't want to shell out the $400 for a Sonic wall, you can basically use this Coyote Linux. For those of you who don't even have a Linux system, they have a very nice Windows-based wizard that asks you a bunch of questions, you fill them out, you hit OK, and it generates the boot install for you. And then after that, you put it in and you turn it on and you're done. I haven't used this one, but in concept, it was pretty neat, and so I just mention it. The Webmin I mentioned simply because it has a really nice IP chains configuration module for it. It's easy to install. It's relatively, I'm not going to say secure, but if you limit it to the local machine, it's a really convenient way to do IP chains rules. If you don't want to learn the command syntax of IP chains, it'll write the scripts for you, and you still have to test it, and it's unpleasant, but I think it's a little less unpleasant for those of you that don't know IP chains. More resources, the Linux Router Project from ZDNet. That tells you step-by-step how to do a floppy-based firewall with Linux with packet filtering. It tells you exactly step-by-step what you need to do. It's a fairly, it'll probably take you a while to do, though, if you've never done Linux, because it tells you, but it takes a long time. I just listed it as an interesting thing. A good book, if you want to learn IP chains and how to configure Linux, is Linux Firewalls. And it tells you basically how to do what's called a default deny firewall, which means that it only allows those things which you tell it to. So if someone decides to install a Trojan on your computer that's listening on port 22, and port 22 isn't in your allow list, it's not getting out, period. Now, it can be a pain in the ass for those people who use some of the gaming protocols that require dynamic connections, because like the Microsoft and a lot of those other gaming things, basically, they do really insecure things, and they don't work well with what's called NAT, which like say that your phone company gives you one IP address, and you want to have six machines on it. Well, what Linux will do is it'll, or any firewall that does NAT, network address translation, it takes your illegal internal addresses and makes it look like everything's coming from the firewall. So you can, and it's also good for security, because at least that way they can't get to your internal machines. Finally, this link right here, I'll move my little pointer up there. That one is actually, that's just kind of a nice page on all kinds of different firewall resources. This is where I found Coyote Linux. Google, of course, is my search engine of choice these days. They are very fast and have a very good database. And I think that's it. I'm open for questions now, if anyone wants to ask them.
I wanted to comment also that FreeBSD has a very nice ISO image that you can just install right from the CD, and mm-hmm. It installs FreeBSD with the firewall.
Okay. Yeah, again, I'm not claiming that I don't know FreeBSD. I don't know FreeBSD. It's unfortunately not something that has been in my experience realm. I know everyone says it's good. I'm probably going to go home and play with it. But again, it's not something that you do see largely. You see it in the stores, but it's always kind of off by the side. And I feel sorry for you FreeBSD people, and because from a security perspective, it looks like, from what I've read, FreeBSD is better in some respects. Default, mind you. Anyways, and you can get in the holy wars as to which is the best, so I don't want to do that. I just wanted to say that whatever works, and for a basic home user, I've never done a FreeBSD install. The last time I did one was 1992.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. You don't have to install anything. It's just
right.
Firewall.
Okay. So you just boot off the CD.
Right.
Okay. But that's pretty cool. You know, I mean, that there's also a neat FreeBSD one I saw, and I don't remember where it is. You plug a floppy. You download the floppy, you put the floppy in, and then you actually configure your firewall online. That's a pretty neat one, too. I don't remember which one that was, unfortunately. Anyone else? Sir? Linksys makes me very nervous. Their network cards tend to blow up, and I haven't had any experience with their routers, but I know that their network cards are crap. And if their network cards are crap, probably you're going to have problems with it. As far as I'm concerned, I mean, if you're looking at a small office, I would think, even though they're expensive, I like the Noikia Checkpoint appliances. They look the best. They use their own OS, and They use Checkpoint, which a lot of people may say is not good, but it's certainly much better than Raptor and some of the other firewalls I've seen. And for a small office, it's $3,000. You plug it in, you turn it on, and it works. You don't need a lot of system administration skill, basically. So I wouldn't recommend the Linksys. I mean, not to say that I haven't had experience with it, but they just, it makes me nervous. I mean, from what I've seen of their other equipment. From a security standpoint, I don't have any other opinion, but I know that some of their network cards are very bad. We usually break them in half because we don't like them. Any other questions? Sir.
You mentioned about appliances, and you mentioned about some of the Windows stuff.
Yes.
Myself, I'm using Zone Alarm.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. Maybe I'm missing something.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, appliances, there's different classes of them. The question, first of all, is what's the difference between, say, a Windows-based firewall and, say, an appliance firewall, and is one in software, and what's the difference between the hardware? An appliance, technically, is actually both software and hardware. In the case of a Sonic wall, it's a strong ARM processor with a proprietary OS with firmware that's loaded. The Nokia appliance, on the other hand, is just a normal Intel appliance, basically, that's got their own version of FreeBSD, I think is what they used, and they harden it, and it just ships to you as a firewall appliance. It doesn't have any floppy drives, and you turn it on, and it works, well, in theory. And then that's basically the main difference. And then, like the Windows ones, that basically means, in my mind, when non-appliance means you as the end user have to install, secure, and patch the OS so that it is in a hardened state. Hardened state meaning that as many as possible of existing vulnerabilities have been patched. So I'm going to go to the next. Sir? Yeah? Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. The benefit is your system doesn't lock up. You have to, at Windows, a lot of the Windows things that I have seen, Windows is a hodgepodge to begin with. You're putting another layer of functionality into Windows. You're doing things in your IP stack. You're doing things, and if you're doing a lot of high speed, and I don't know if this is true or not, but from what I've seen in the past with Windows, those things slow the system down. They slow the system down, they add additional levels of complexity, and themselves could be vulnerable to things. If there's a bug in that, I mean, there's always bugs, but I mean, I like to have the bugs as far away from my host as possible. That's my main argument, is that you want to stop the attacks even before they get to your host. Sir, in the you, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's not true, because all the ones I see, you can have a default deny outbound with the appliances that I've seen. You can have outbound rules, and you can say, I only want to allow this stuff. I can ban this keyword. You can turn off ActiveX. You can turn off Java. At least the new appliances can. Actually, it will, because if you do a default deny, you change your rule stance. It's not the appliance or whatever. It's your rule stance. If you do a default deny rule stance, only port 80 is going to be allowed out of your firewall. Now, granted, I don't urge, as a basic home user, I don't think most people are going to be really capable, not to be insulting, but your average home user is probably not going to be able to set up a default deny firewall very well. Because any rules in your error set are your logic, and it's pretty much, what's the point? So the reason I mention these is there's only so much security that a home user can expect. I agree with you. It doesn't protect against those by default. It can, but again, you have to realize you're dealing with mom and pops that can barely turn on a computer. And so at least they have something in front of their host that's going to protect them from some classes of attacks. Again, it's not perfect, and it's not by any means an ideal solution, but it's better than nothing. Sir. Yes, it is. Because basically, in my mind, it's the idea of privilege. You want to keep a firewall doing what it does best, firewalling. If you say you're running sendmail on an IP chains-based firewall and it's an old version, they route your sendmail, guess what? So much for your firewall. If you have just one service running on your firewall, the rest of your network is still protected at least. And because the more security is complexity, or actually the opposite of security is complexity. The more complex you get, the less secure your system is, because there's more things that can go wrong and have bugs in them. So that's why you don't, in my mind, you don't want to run any services on the firewall. I know you can, but I don't recommend it. With a computer costing $300, it's cheap security to have a separate mail server if you really need one. Sir?
Do you have any recommendations?
No, I've actually had some experience with them. The people that use the things like the Black Ice Defender and whatnot, every other version it doesn't work. Sometimes it will cause the system to lock up randomly. It'll cause blue screens. And with just Windows software in general that does that kind of thing, it's interfacing on a very low level, and you're just adding another thing into a witch's brew. So it's more than just a feeling. It's just a basic knowledge that Windows itself, especially Windows 98 and Windows NT, are inherently unstable, and you really don't want to add anything else to them to make them more unstable. I know that's not exactly answering your question, but yes, I just keep it as simple as you can to keep your system running well. That's, anyways, sir?
I'm supporting a couple of mother-in-law networks, and one of them is for Northern Internet Security. Mm-hmm. Anything for the basic Windows user?
I actually use Norton at home. I like it. Especially with the anti-ActiveX and a lot of the other stuff. It's very quick. It seems never to blow up the machine. The virus definitions are reasonable. I've been very happy with the Norton products. McAfee products, on the other hand, they're slow. They blow up. The virus's definitions don't work real well. So on the Windows side of that, I strongly recommend everyone to have a virus scanner on their system if they're Windows based. It's $30, and if you don't have a firewall, at least have one of these, because it'll prevent a lot of the ActiveX and scripting attacks from working. So that's just kind of an aside. You know, have a firewall. Person in the back.
Would you recommend a book or app security issues that has a firewall. The
problem with every single book I've ever seen on security is they assume a basic knowledge of TCP/IP. In a quick way to tell you, understand TCP/IP before you try to do a firewall. This one's horrible, but it's what I learned it on, was TCP/IP Internetworking by Comer. But it's like reading an engineering text. I mean, it's very esoteric. The Linux Firewalls book is really good. The one that I mentioned in here, and it's downloadable on my website, that one is what taught me how to do, and it tells you all about TCP/IP and the rules and doing the IP chains. And also, kind of plugging myself, I have another presentation on how to do an IP chains firewall tomorrow. If you look on your schedule, you'll see it. So if you want to learn how to do an IP chains firewall, I will show you how. With a few simple rules, how to make a fairly robust firewall that's going to protect you against probably 75% of the attacks. So, sorry, there's... Sir?
Do you have any experience with firewall
on Mac OS? The only thing I can tell you about Mac OS is it seems like it's more secure simply because of the fact that nobody uses it. I'm not trying to be mean, but I do desktop publishing and I love it for that. Just put a firewall in front of it, or just use Linux for the Macintosh. You have an old G3, not an old G3, well, they're old now, an old G3 lying around, go get yourself two interface cards and set it up as a Linux firewall. You know, I mean, basically. But to answer your question, I don't know of any products or whatever for Mac. Sir? No, I haven't. Again, my stance being that I think that a firewall should be in front of the host. You want the gateway to be protected. If you're better than nothing. I mean, I'd say go ahead and try it, you know. But I, as a security professional, cannot and will not ever advocate the use of that kind of software for a primary defense on a system. That's just something I will not do as a security person. Any other questions? Person in the back. Are there any $50 firewalls that have minimal... Well, consider that you have to have a hard drive. Hard drives are $75, and you have to have a processor. They're $20, and you have to have, if you have one that's flash RAM, which is the most secure, that's like $100. I mean, there's cost. Yes. What? Actually, it does. It has a processor. It has RAM. It has a silicone disk, 8 megs of it. And you've also got the people who design the things. Designing a firewall takes a long time. And frankly, they need to be paid for what they do. If you want a $50 firewall, I think that you can do the Coyote Linux, or you can do, but even then it's not a $50 firewall. You still got to have a computer. You know, a computer, even if you have an old 486 laying around, it's free, but it still costs something in the sense of, you know, network cards and whatnot. Ma'am? How to protect them? Basically, the nice thing about doing the firewall the way I described it is every device that is plugged into the firewall is protected. Your wireless, for instance, in the case of your wireless, you plug your wireless module into one of the ports on the back of the sonic wall, and your wireless connects through to the internet on the internet. So basically all your devices are going through the firewall. So you can have 100 devices that are unprotected and one firewall, and they're all protected. That's the nice thing about not doing host-based security, is if you've got, you know, a computer in your daughter's room and a computer in your son's room and a computer in your kitchen, you just hook them all up to the hub and you hook them up and have the firewall hooked to the uplink port, and they're all protected. No other effort. You turn it on once and you protect every device on your computer network. Well, the only thing you have to keep in mind with wireless, it's wireless. That means other people can listen to your transmissions. So if you've got a fairly, you know, savvy neighbor and they're, you know, close to you like in a lot of cities, they're probably going to be able to see your transmissions. I mean, that's just life. Use SSL. You know, use SSL and don't transmit anything in the clear. It would be my basic, you know, rule of thumb. Don't send your credit card over any non-SSL-enabled website, period. I never send it an email. That's the general rule. Questions? Ma'am over there? Oh, yeah. The nice thing about a firewall is it doesn't care what your OS is. It just says, oh, packet coming from host A. And do I allow it? Do I deny it? And so it doesn't matter. You can use Amiga, I mean, or Next. I mean, it doesn't matter. Once it's behind a firewall, it's behind a firewall. So it doesn't, as long as it speaks TCP/IP, that's the only requirement. It won't work with SNA. Anyone else? Okay, well, thank you for your time.